but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights. In for John Canzano, here's Judah Newby with the bald-faced truth.
Moore out of shotgun, receives the snap, sprint out to his left. Moore now stops, he's chased, he steps up, throws deep for Haas, makes the catch! 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown! Beavers for the lead!
I mean, if that doesn't do something for you, I don't know what does. I mean, that is peak Beaver football. Mike Parker on the call back in 2005. Beaver Sports Network from Learfield. With the credit there, shout out to Hank helping out with the highlight there of our next guest, one of the legends that came through Corvallis, the Biletnikoff Award winner in 2005, a College Football Hall of Famer. An absolute Beaver legend, a local football legend at that. He was always been on my short list of people to get caught up with and get to do it now on the radio show. Mike Haas joining us on the hotline. Mike, it's great to get caught up with you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show today.
You hear that Mike Parker highlight, you know, what kind of memories go through your head?
I'm not gonna lie to you. I got some chills there when I heard it. You know, I remember that like it wasn't 20 years ago. I remember it like it was yesterday. It's always cool to hear the old highlights and things. And you know, I don't get a lot of time to look back in life with the family and job and all that good stuff. But it's always fun when I get to.
So you say family and job, and I told some people this week. I was like, Mike Haas is coming on the show, and they're like, oh, that's awesome. Where is he now? What's he up to? Let people know, you know, where are you and what are you up to?
Yeah, I live in Sherwood. So I'm pretty local. I've been here with my wife for 12 years now. We've been down here in Sherwood and we have two kids, my son Logan, who is 7, and my daughter Gwyneth, who is 5. And I work for a asphalt additive company, kind of on the sales side. Working with asphalt pavers around the state, providing them with a fiber additive that helps make the asphalt a little more durable and last longer for them.
That Beaver, that OSU degree, right? Going to work,
right.
Huh?
Civil engineering degree.
You know, and you were at Nike for a while before that too. I think people, you know, remember you from there as well. And you mentioned going down memory lane. I'm going to self-indulge myself and ask you some questions to go down memory lane. But you mentioned that you don't get that many chances to do it. I wonder, are you naturally inclined to go back and think about your college football career? Or are you just so focused on the present and things like your family, obviously, and your job and stuff like that? But I got to imagine people come up to you and ask you about your Oregon State career on a regular basis.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was three years ago or so. I was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame, so I got to kind of relive some of that past. And then a year later, I was inducted to the Oregon State College Hall of Fame down there. So again, the next year, I kind of got to relive it. So it's been a lot of fun. And you know, when I talk to clients and things, you know, some remember, some don't, some care, some don't, and that's all good. But yeah, I get asked a lot of questions. How are your time down there? How's the NFL? What'd you like most? All those types of things. And so it was fun to talk to people about that.
You're a Portland guy, you know, Jesuit guy. Even before you get to Oregon State, you're busy scoring 7 touchdowns in an OSAA state playoff game. Did that really happen?
That happened. Yeah. I scored 6 in the first half. and we were up pretty big on Central there. I think it was the quarterfinals of the state playoffs. And I tell people, you know, we let our foot off the gas, fog rolled in. you know, we didn't need to throw the ball much more, but I think I probably could have scored 10 or 12 that night.
That's incredible. What, you know, your teammates must have been like, were they aware of what you were doing, or was everybody so caught up in the playoff game, no one knew exactly the record you were putting up?
Yeah, no one knew what the record was, but we were sitting in there at halftime, and my buddy Mark Hansen, still a good friend of mine, we're sitting in the locker room. He goes, "Mike, do you know what you're doing?" And I was like, "Just playing football, man. Just going out there, and when they throw me the ball, catching it and running, man. That's it." So, you know, it's just one of those things where things clicked, and it was a fun night for sure.
Ken Potter, you know, long time coach. What does he mean to you, and what did he mean to you as a player?
He was great. You know, he should have played me at receiver before my senior year. But yeah, you know, he had a disciplined approach. And I give him a lot of credit. You know, Jesuit football at that time was, you know, run the football down the throat, you know, have a better line, manhandle people. He saw we had a little bit of a different team that year. We were still good up front, but, you know, we were really good at skill positions. So, he kind of switched his philosophy for that year and aired it out. You know, he's a smart enough coach, you know, he's the OSAA leader in wins, I believe. So congratulations to him. But, you know, he was smart enough to, you know, take the players you have and use them to the best of their ability.
You a multi-sport, you know, athlete growing up. It's a fun, it's an interesting conversation around it now with all the specialization and what are the advantages or disadvantages of focusing on one sport or playing multiple. Where did you kind of come out on that growing up in the Haas family household?
I played all three. I played football, baseball, basketball. And I'm going to encourage my son to do that, you know, specializing, you know, wears kids out. You know, I didn't want to play baseball all year. You know, I didn't want to play football all year, frankly, to be honest. It was too much hitting right there. You know, about the only sport you can play all year, it's maybe basketball, but then, you know, you specialize into one thing. And I think you learn different skills in the different sports. You know, you got baseball, the hand eye, you got dealing with failure, patience, those types of things, you know, football, basketball, really your athletic stuff. But different movements, you know, so to become, in my opinion, and, you know, people are driving their kids to one thing, that's their prerogative. But, you know, I'm going to tell my son to play as much as he can, play whatever sports you like to play. I think you become a more well-rounded athlete that way.
You know, when I think about your style and just kind of your story, I'm like, dude, guy was not the biggest or the fastest in the world, may have been overlooked at multiple levels along the way. He didn't care. He went out there and gave it his all on the field, and then the performance and the numbers speak for themselves. But I'm curious, like, your family and your parents growing up, with the kind of style of athlete that you were, like, what kind of encouragement, what kind of support did you get from your family? What were some of the tougher days, especially as you're probably getting to be like a high school junior and senior, and you're not really getting those college scholarship opportunities that you may have been open for right away?
Yeah, they always told me to focus on academics. excuse me. you know, I don't think anybody thinks their kid is going to be a professional athlete growing up. They shouldn't, because it's a very, very hard thing to do. So they just encouraged me to play the sports I wanted to play. Encouraged me to do good in school. Disciplined me when I did the wrong things, which is important. And yeah, we're just supportive all the way through. I remember my dad, I was fishing with him. I was a sophomore in college and going into my sophomore year. And it was after Erickson and Riley had switched coaches there. And, you know, I wasn't getting very many reps and I was pretty far down on the depth chart. And I was like, I don't know if this is for me. I should just focus on school. And he's just like, meh, go back down there this summer, have some fun, do your training. And then you can reassess, you know, the next year. And that's the year that, that's the training camp that I broke out and, earned a scholarship and really started my career there at Oregon State. So it's kind of funny how that all works out.
Man, what a time, what a time. And going back and looking at some of these Beaver seasons and these schedules and thinking about the Dennis Erickson teams and what was Dennis like when you first got to know him a little bit? You know, I think about those Jonathan Smith, Dennis Erickson, 2000 era teams with Chad and TJ and all that. And how much of, you know, Dennis Erickson's playbook, do you still remember, or what was it like getting to know him as an early collegiate athlete?
Yeah, he was a great coach. Obviously, he was well respected, a national champion coach. They were coming off a Fiesta Bowl season. You know, when I talked to him about walking on, I talked to, you know, Oregon down there. I didn't get to talk to the head coach or anything of that. And then I come down for the spring game, and you know, I meet with Erickson. And he's like, "Come down here, you'll have an opportunity. I can't guarantee you anything, obviously." So Oregon State felt like the obvious place to go. And then, yeah, he he had some players. I remember one of the first days of training camp, I'm there, and we're running a team drill, and, you know, something happens, and two of these guys start fighting, you know, and ripping helmets off, throwing punches, that type of thing. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, these guys are going to be in so much trouble. You know, if we did that in high school, we're running laps forever. And they just break it up, blow the whistle, on to the next play. So that was an eye-opening moment that this is going to be a battle here. It's a little different than the high school game at Jesuit.
Were you always confident that you were going to get opportunities, you know, when you're walking on at Oregon State? Or, you know, what was your confidence level in yourself coming in from Jesuit early?
Yeah, I knew I was a good player. You know, I had some developing to do, you know, with the weightlifting and speed training and things of that nature. But that's what everybody does when they go to college. They got to develop a little bit. And, you know, you really gain confidence by making plays, you know, proving yourself to yourself at that level. And I did that. I went in there redshirted, and my freshman redshirt year, you know, no one really knew about me, but, and I was playing on special teams. I even got into, you know, 5 wide receiver set in a couple games. Those are things people don't remember because they, you know, didn't get the ball thrown to me, wasn't making plays and whatnot, but I was really making progress with Erickson and that crew, and Eric Yarber. He was a spectacular wide receiver coach that I had down there at that time, really instilled confidence in me. I remember I ran a route like 10 yards on a 12-yard curl. And, you know, I caught the ball and I turned up the field and ran, and I was like, oh, that's great. You know, he comes out there yelling at me. He's like, why'd you run short? I was like, what do you mean? He's like, why'd you run the route short? And I said, oh, you know, everyone was telling me I'm too slow, so I just wanted to get around and, you know, be there for the quarterback. He's like, you are not too slow. You are fine. Run the route at 12 yards. And so just those small things of confidence that, he helped give me, was a big boost.
You know, the Mike Riley element of all this, we're talking to Mike Hass, Biletnikoff winner from 05, Oregon State legend and College Football Hall of Famer. You mentioned it was a little bit, you know, rocky with Mike Riley early. Describe for us, you know, how you ended up working your way into either the good graces or just a little bit more playing time. And was it just a matter of time because you were making plays out there? He didn't have any option other than to put you on the field.
Yeah, it was real rocky. It was a real rocky start. You know, he comes in, I'm a walk-on still. I believe I was on my way to getting a scholarship with Erickson. He leaves, his whole staff leaves. Riley comes in, brings in a whole new staff. I'm kind of back to square one where I was when I came in 2 years ago, you know, and, you know, I didn't get very many reps in spring ball. When I did get them, you know, I pressed too hard. So it was a terrible spring ball for me. And Mike Riley, he always tells me, you know, after that spring ball, we were looking at the roster and who to invite back to camp. And I almost wasn't invited back to training camp. You know, I would have been invited back when the season starts, but you can only have a certain number of bodies, when training camp starts at the NCAA level. Luckily some things happened or people left or whatever it may be, or I was the last guy invited, but, I was invited to training camp and, you know, there were some injuries, some suspensions and things of that nature. And, I kind of got some opportunities. And then from there, I just destroyed the DBs. I mean, they couldn't stop me. I remember Nigel Burton was the DB coach at the time. At the beginning of training camp, I was roasting like Brandon Browner and Eric Williams, their starting corners, good corners too. And, he was getting so angry at him. I said, how are you letting this white guy, you know, beat you all the time? They're like, he's pretty good. <You know? laughs> And then by the end of camp, it was like, okay, it's just Mike, you know, try to do better on this, your technique or whatever it is. So, that month was, how the legend started, I guess. so to speak.
Man, I you know, Brandon Brown, as I'm a Seahawk fan, and obviously I remember what Brandon Browner was at his had his peak as an outside press corner and just so long and lanky. And I can imagine here you are and you're like, you know, dusting him, getting him up. You know, no one could compete with your wiggle, Mike. I mean, come on now.
Yeah, he was good. He was tough. He liked to hold.
Yeah, yeah, big time. Yeah.
But yeah, he had those long arms. They were tough to get out of. He made me better for sure.
You know, gosh, man. And as I look at these, some of these rosters and these memories, these Beaver teams were awesome. I mean, you were catching balls, you know, in the highlight. I think that's a Matt Moore highlight from 05, but then Derek Anderson prior to that, Steven Jackson on these teams as well. You know, who are some of your close friends or you know, some of the guys that you were closest to on those teams? Obviously, there are a lot of legends in the locker room that you played with.
Yeah, the guy I was closest to probably was Trent, which is kind of funny. It's fun to see him be the head coach now. And DA is obviously a great guy, Bill Swancutt, Mitch Musin. You know, I see those guys around every now and again at a golf course or getting dinner somewhere. And so it was fun to catch up with those guys. You go down to a game and see some of your guys, Roy Shooting, funny guys. You know, we had a lot of fun. We spent a lot of time together in, you know, some of the best times of our lives.
Trent Bray, when you're it's funny that I did include him in the short list of beef legends, but the dude embodied so much of what it meant to play defense at Oregon State as well. You know, what made you and Trent click as undergrads back then?
Oh, we just like to have a good time. I have some Trent stories that I will not share, but and I'm sure he has some of me that he probably would share. But yeah, we just had a lot of fun together. You know, back then it wasn't like today. I feel sorry for some of the, I mean, they're getting paid, so I don't feel that sorry for them, but with the iPhones and, you know, everything, everybody taking videos of everything and whatnot, it's hard for those guys to go out and enjoy, you know, some of the college life and have some fun, you know. We were able to do that. You know, we had flip phones and things of that nature. So we were able to get away with a little more in our time than these guys can now.
Flip phones, you know, from singular wireless, you know, all this good stuff. Back in the, I just remember when Singular Wireless or like the Nokia Sugar Bowl, that was the big sponsor back in the early 2000s. I remember the,
you play a little snake game all the time on that thing.
Snake is what you do on the flip phones. Talking to Mike Hass on the Bald Face Truth. What about Trent Bray as a head coach? Did anything in his personality or playing style that you remember from, you know, collegiately that you're like, dude, I could see this guy being a coach someday?
Oh, absolutely. He wanted to be a coach. The day he played on Oregon State, you know, his dad was the defensive coordinator. He always knew he was going to go into coaching as we were playing. He was going to take his career as far as he could. You know, he was invited to, I remember playing against him when he was on the Texans and I was on the Bears in the preseason. And he was always going to be a coach when his playing career was done. And he was always smart, super, super smart guy. Knew where to line up everybody, you know, and that's why he's such a great defensive coordinator. You know, I was a little surprised to see him take the head coaching job. You know, he always told me that wasn't his goal. He loved being a coordinator and whatnot, but the opportunity to be a head coach at Oregon State, for him and transition it in a time where it's really tough, you know, he's got a really tough job and he's doing a great job. But, you know, and the NIL stuff makes it really brutal, especially for a school like Oregon State. You know, but we got a quarterback this year, and I'm excited to see what they do this year.
Well, that's one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on because, you know, from my mind and as a college football fan, as a kid growing up, when I watched you play, you embodied so much of what I feel like Oregon State is, which is tough, resilient, and gritty, you know, make no excuses, go get the job done, and make some memories along the way. But Mike, it's been a tough few years with realignment and where the Beavers are, but they are still displaying those same characteristics and qualities. I don't think we've caught up with you since everything has gone down in the last few years. From your vantage point, I mean, a lot to unpack there, but you know, what have you kind of worked through emotionally with your alma mater that's gone through so much in recent years?
Yeah, I hate it. You know, I hate to see it. You know, the Pac-10, Pac-8/Pac-10/Pac-12 is, it's been around for so long with so much history. It should have stayed. There should have been a way to make that happen. You know, USC and UCLA kind of started the ball rolling, and then, you know, Oregon decides not to, you know, care about Oregon State at all. Join up with Washington and leave Oregon State and Washington State to fend for themselves. You know, it's an unfair game. You know, I understand they have more money and are going for the money. I get it, but, you know, to leave us, you know, to rebuild the pack, it's really tough. It's tough to see, tough to watch, but, you know, I'm hoping, you know, this is just the beginning of building it back up to where it was, before it was broken down.
Anyone in the, like, administration or coaching staff, obviously Trent, I'm sure, is somebody that you've kept in touch with, but, like, do you still have conversations with people in the athletic department at Oregon State about some of this and some of the rebuilding efforts?
Yeah, a little bit, you know, not a lot, because I'm not involved in it. Yeah, I mean, nobody loves what happened, but, you know, you're mentioning how Oregon State's gritty and gets off the mat and comes back at you. So, you know, that's what they're going to do, rebuilding the conference. And I'm glad they're doing that. And it's, you know, I'm glad they got the teams for 26 and, you know, start building something special.
How about that NIL, huh? You know, what a world.
Well, yeah, they should have paid me way back when.
Oh, you weren't paid? Oh, I didn't realize.
No, I wasn't. yeah, it's messy. You know, you look at a school like Oregon State and, you know, they're really good at developing players. So you sit there and spend the time and money and effort to, you know, build a player to a starting caliber player. You know, and then one of the bigger schools just gives them more money. You know, it's a broken system. That can't be how it is. Otherwise, you just have the same eight teams year after year, you know, that are contenders and no one else is, which isn't very fun.
Mike Cash joining us. A Biletnikoff Award winner, Mike, in 05. I mean, how special an experience was that entire season? But to get an award like that from your background of being overlooked, being a walk-on, proving yourself the whole way, and then in a season, nobody was better at the receiver position in college football than you.
Yeah, very cool, obviously. You know, but after my senior year, I thought, you know, I deserve it. You know, I put up the numbers. I did, you know, I had the catches and the yards and had some touchdowns. And, you know, I was right up there with anybody else in the nation. It was cool. It was cool for Oregon State. You know, Alexis Cerno won the Lou Groza the same year, which is pretty crazy. You know, but Oregon State doesn't get a lot of national recognition, not a lot of national awards. So it's cool for me personally, obviously. Something I have to my name for the rest of my life, that no one can take from me. But it's also cool for the school to have some of those awards. I see them, you know, when I go down to Corvallis, they got a beautiful beautiful Valley Center down there. They've renovated over the years, and you know, you see the awards there, and it's pretty cool. It's you know, it was cooler to show my son that was mine, and it's the same trophy that's in my office here at home. But it's just been cool to see him kind of recognize, oh, Dad was a good football player, and like, oh, Dad was a good football player, you know. So it's been fun.
I can't imagine that had to have been such a fun dad moment right there, huh?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. We went down on the field. We got recognized, or I got recognized, but, yeah, he got to go down the field and see the crowd cheer and wave his hand and be on the Jumbotron. So that was pretty cool for him.
You know, 2004 was not a bad year for you either, Mike. Heck, 2003 either. I mean, you went over 1,000 yards in each of those seasons. You know, I believe you're the first player in the history of the conference to have three consecutive 1,000-yard seasons. It's funny, like, we all talk 05 and Biletnikoff, but you've got to be proud of just, like, you know, each and every year, the amount of production that you had.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my sophomore year was a year where I had to kind of prove myself. You know, I started the first game of the year, then I was switched the other time when James Newsom came back. Kind of split time with another guy and kind of had to beat him out and then prove myself each and every game to get more balls thrown to me and more plays called for me. Then the next year I moved into James's spot there, the X, that's the main spot for receiver there in Bradley's offense. And, you know, again, I had to prove myself. You know, the coaching staff was trying to bring in JC guys and things to take that spot and leave me on the other side. And they're like, okay, you got your chance to do it, you know. And then I obviously had a really good year. And then going into my senior year was the only year really that I was, like, solidified as, you know, this is my spot. No one's taking it from me. And, you know, I'm going to be the guy. So, you know, it's funny to look back on it that way, but that's exactly how it was. You know, always being doubted and always having to prove myself, but that's okay.
Even to the coaching staff, you know, it's like, you didn't see enough from my first year out there. And it's funny, you know, I always think of Mike Riley as this happy-go-lucky guy and all that. But, I mean, at the end of the day, he's a coach. He's got edge. He's got, you know, some opinions and one's way he runs his program. Did you ever feel like by the end, though, that you are one of Mike Riley's guys? Like, he's always going to hold you in high regard. What kind of relationship do you have with him now?
I love Mike Riley. He's an awesome human being, great football coach. You know, without him, I wouldn't have had the success that I had at Oregon State. It's a great offense to be a wide receiver in, especially as the number one guy. Yeah, I went to his Hall of Fame induction for the state of Oregon a few years ago. I see him at games whenever we get down there. Always give him a big hug. Just a great, special human, great coach. Mike Riley's a great, great man.
And then Brandon Cooks as well. I'm sure the offense may have evolved a little bit over time, but Brandon did the same thing, right, in 2013 at that X position in a Riley offense. It's fun to see. Then not only Biletnikoff, you go into the College Football Hall of Fame. I mean, how surreal was that a few years ago?
That's probably my biggest accomplishment. I mean, I know I won the Biletnikoff Award, and that was incredible. But when I got the call that I was going into the National College Football Hall of Fame, that was kind of, no, I'm not going in the NFL Hall of Fame, I'll tell you that right now. So that was, yeah, that was the biggest nod I could get, you know, being elected to the National College Hall of Fame. And what a ceremony that was, and they did a great job. And it's a really cool, if anybody can get down to Atlanta and see the College Football Hall of Fame, I would recommend it. It's a great little spot.
Who gave you the call that you were going in?
It was Scott Barnes, the athletic director at Oregon State. I was down in Jamaica, actually, with my wife. And he, around a little after dinner time, gave me a call and said, hey, you're in the College Hall of Fame. And I was like, Oregon State Hall of Fame? Because I kind of expected that one. He's like, no, like the National College Hall of Fame. And I was like, whoa, that's a big one. So that was a pretty cool moment.
Well, now every time you go to Jamaica, you'll be able to say, oh, that's where I was called to go to the College Football Hall of Fame. So.
Well, it's a long way away. I don't know if I want to make that track again.
Mike Cass joining us. Now, before I let you go, you know, the rivalry with the Ducks, what do you want to see? Do you want to see this game every year, or how are your feelings on it?
No, I don't want to see it every year. You know, I know if Oregon State gets some monetary benefit from it, I get it. But, you know, screw them. They left. You know, that's all I have to say about that. We don't owe them anything to play that game. You know, and with the directions the programs are going after they left the conference and left us to fend for ourselves. You know, it's kind of a more of an unfair advantage than it was in the past. So I say, you know, let them go schedule, you know, Georgia or somebody.
That 2004 Civil War. How often do you think about that one?
Yeah, that was a fun one. You know, that's when, you know, the teams were more on a level playing field. You know, money wasn't the dictator and who you get in recruiting and all those things. It was fun. You know, it was fun when, you know, the Pac-12 or Pac-10 at that time was super competitive. Obviously, USC was dominant at that time nationally. But, you know, anybody could have beat anybody in that conference in a year, pretty much. You know, that's where it was, and that's when it was at its peak, and that's when it was really fun to watch and play in.
There's a lot of things that you could take pride in your career, but what's the biggest thing that you take pride in when you look back on what you accomplished in football?
That's a good question. You know, just I think my story, when people hear about it, you know, it can give kids hope. That if you're overlooked, if you don't get recruited, Someone tells you you're not good enough, that doesn't mean that's the truth. You know, you look at, you know, Jesuit High School, player of the year in the state of Oregon, first team offense, defense, did everything I could to get a scholarship. Didn't get one. I said, screw it, I'm going to Oregon State. You know, I'm not going to Portland State. I'm not dropping down a level. You know, I'm going to go play at the highest level. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. That's all good, right? But, you know, I'm going to prove myself and other people that I'm good enough. And, you know, that story, I think, resonates with a lot of people. It's a cool story. It's hard. You know, a lot of people don't know how hard it is, how much work behind the scenes, how much time it takes. But, you know, if you want it bad enough, you can do it. And I think that's a cool story for people to hear about and resonate to.
We've gone 30 minutes, and yet I feel like I could ask you another hour and a half worth of questions about life advice, professional advice, you know, approach, mindset, toughness, resilience, and you would have a lot to say about that. So I'll let you go here, Mike, but I got to say, I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. I know a lot of Beaver fans were looking forward to tuning in and listening as well. Thanks for making time for it on your schedule. This won't be the last time, I'm sure. I'll look forward to the next time catching up, and thanks for your honesty and your candor on all things your career and Oregon State. We appreciate it.
No, it's been fun. So thank you for having me on.
Mike Hass, Beavs legend, College Football Hall of Famer. We'll go to break. We'll come back, unpack some of his comments, and we'll talk some more college football along the way. Jude Anubi with you here on the Bald Faced Truth, 750 The Game in the BFT Radio Network.